ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Let's start today's Country Hour by heading over the border to Queensland, where initial stock loss figures are being released after the floods have affected much of northwest Queensland. The latest figures say over 19,000 head of cattle are either missing or deceased, but there's hope that it won't be as significant as the 2019 floods, which killed an estimated 450,000 animals. The flooding also comes at a time when producers and processors need to navigate a new export hurdle into China. Simon Quilty is a meat and livestock analyst and consultant from Global Agri Trends. He spoke with Barbara Miller about the losses and how they could impact the national herd.
Barbara, they are in the vicinity of 19 to 20,000 head so far as we can gather. It's very localised and very different to that January 2019 flood, which was far more widespread. And the losses, as you said, were greater than 450,000. The one area that's particularly badly hit at the moment is Flinders River. And at the moment at Normanton, it's 16 metres high, just below the 2019 record level of 17.1. The real impact here, Barbara, is after the floods recede, the floodwaters, because the concern with hypothermia is that a lot of these animals, this is a breeding area, so calves and cows, could die due to hypothermia and could take the losses, I believe, to potentially greater than 50,000.
And what about the rain? Is that in any way good? Is there any upside?
Yes, there is, Barbara. So here we have a situation where Queensland, for the last 2.5 years, has been in a holding pattern in terms of whether rebuilding or liquidating, whereas Southern Australia, we've seen a very heavy liquidation occur. This rainfall, given how widespread across northern and central Queensland, I think could be the trigger to seeing a rebuild commence in northern Australia, driven by both good rains, good pastures, and good prices that have come from the south.
And as we said there, Simon, this comes as China has announced new tariffs once Australia exceeds a quota for its beef exports. How big a hurdle is this going to be for the industry?
There is no doubt this is a challenge, and we've now been set a safeguard, which is the level at which we get to in terms of beef exports at 205,000 metric tonnes. Where it gets challenging for us, Barbara, is that in the past we have had safeguards before, but the tariff, once you reach that level, was 12%. Today, that's 55%, and it's cost prohibitive, and we'll see the flow of beef stop into China as a result.
What does it mean, though, that they, you know, once this tariff kicks in, once a certain level of export has been reached, does that, you know, how does that affect the industry over the course of a year?
Well, what happens is that we have many programs in place for high quality beef, whether it's chilled or frozen. And that requires sending consistently product every month to meet the requirements of customers and consumers across China. So when you suddenly introduce this, and it's likely to be filled by probably late April, early May, because of the rush to the door effect, because everyone will try to get in before the trigger is, before the safeguard is triggered. Therefore, that beef flow stops because you suddenly hit 55% very early in the year, and the market will be devoid of meat for the balance of the year.
Are you getting a sense that producers are already looking to alternative markets after this announcement from Beijing?
Possibly, but the problem is, Barbara, that every other supply country into China has been subjected with the same safeguard and the same very high preventative tariffs. In some instances, it's as high as 67%. So the problem is that everyone rushes from all these other countries to fill their safeguard or quota access into China. We all fill it in April, May, and we all look for alternate markets at the same time. I estimate, based on 2025 figures, that this could be as high as 550,000 metric tons at the same time trying to seek other markets globally. That leads to downward pressure on pricing. So, Barbara, we think there's a way forward here, though, a better solution for Australia to try and avoid this problem.
Simon Quilty is a meat and livestock analyst with Global AgriTrends, speaking with Barbara Miller. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese is expected to visit the region today to assess the damage. Now, the flooding has not only had a drastic impact on livestock, but also on roads. Tobermory Station, which is 4 kilometres from the Queensland border, is one territory station which has been impacted, with all roads in and out of the property closed. And while the roads are closed, the rain has been significantly less damaging for the station and has left the country with a nice green tinge. Tobermory manager Chloe Miles spoke to me earlier to tell me about the rainfall.
At the top of the property, we received about 70 mils. The middle has had about 5 inches, and then down the bottom, we've had about 6 inches of rain.
And it seems like, despite it not being really anywhere near as much as what we've seen in parts of Queensland, it's very much done a number on some of your roads. I believe all your roads around you have been closed.
Yeah, that's correct. So they've been quite closed for a good nearly 2 weeks now, or just before Christmas they closed. So the road into Boulia, or the highway into Boulia, is closed as the Georgina River has risen. And then the road into Mount Isa via Urundanji, it's closed as well as the Georgina River has risen as well.
And the Plenty Highway is also closed as well, hasn't it?
Yes, it is. Sorry, from Jervois Station to us, it's closed as well.
What sort of impact is that having on Tobermory Station? It seems like you've been locked in from all directions.
Yeah, so we are currently, I guess, closed off, but we were prepared. We knew that this rain was coming, or had a fair idea. So we, before it happened, we went into Mount Isa, stocked up on all our stores, and yeah, we've got plenty to get us through. So I wouldn't say it's had a real effect on us at the moment. It's very quiet here this time of year anyway, so it hasn't really affected us that much.
Just to return to the Plenty Highway, it hasn't received the sort of rain totals at all that those parts of Queensland have, yet it's also closed from Jervois Station up to you, which is a couple of hundred kilometres at least. It mustn't take much to shut that highway down.
No, it doesn't take much rain at all for the Plenty Highway to close. I believe about 100 kilometres to the west of us, there is quite a boggy section, and it doesn't need much rain for it just to go to slop. So from my understanding, that's why they've closed that section of the Plenty Highway. We've actually had to drive down there ourselves and tow a few people out of there in between Christmas and New Year's.
What was the reaction of those people when they got themselves stuck out there?
Yeah, I think they're a bit surprised, but I guess, yeah, it happens. People get stuck and people get bogged. So, yeah, we were able to pull them out and send them back towards Alice Springs as, all the roads into Queensland were closed.
70 mils of rain in parts of your place out there at Tobermory Station. I believe even a drive around right now to check out how the country's looking. I imagine it's looking pretty good after that amount of rain.
Yeah, absolutely. We are just driving around, and yeah, it's beautiful and green, and you wouldn't think you're in the middle of the desert at the moment, that's for sure. It's very pretty to see.
Plenty of feed as we head into this new year, I imagine.
Absolutely. The cattle are looking really good and happy with all the green grass that's around.
That was Tobermory Station Manager Chloe Miles.
Just a reminder, when the cricket's on the wireless,
whacks him into the members for six! What a shot!
We're still bringing you local stories and voices on the ABC Listen app.
On ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
If you're just tuning in, this is the NT Country Hour. My name's Charles Geary, and the time is 15 minutes past 11. And we are taking advantage of this break in the cricket to broadcast you today. Now, the Territory's mining sector is a big contributor to the government's coffers. In the current budget, mining and petroleum royalties were expected to total $346 million this year. The industry will be keen to build on that in 2026. Catherine Tilmouth from the Minerals Council of Australia says it's all about critical minerals.
Look, for mining in the NT, we've got some exciting things hopefully on the horizon with Arafura Rare Earths moving closer to FID. So that will be something that's going to be game-changing for that region close to Alice Springs. Also have all of our regular ongoing projects. You've got Newmont and MacArthur River Mine still going really strong and delivering for the NT. Other things that we'll be focusing on and hoping for this year is a bit more in workforce development. We've got some projects, you know, in the pipeline. And the one thing that we want to make sure for the Northern Territory is that Territorians really benefit from these opportunities. So it's about making sure that kids, when they're leaving school, know that there are jobs and prospects for them right here at home in the Territory. So ensuring that they know what sort of jobs that they are, what skills that they're going to need in the future to be able to make the most of those opportunities.
You mentioned Arafura Rare Earths. There's another rare earths project that sort of popped up in recent weeks, Barkley Rare Earths.
Yes.
What role do you see? I mean, critical minerals is it's a topic of discussion in the media and the industry across the world at the minute. And the Territory is relatively well placed, you think, in terms of the resources in the ground. But what role do you see that sector sort of playing, and what needs to happen to utilise those resources and sort of see that full realisation in the Territory?
Well, we're very lucky in the NT that we do have the critical minerals and rare earths that we have such a worldwide demand for them. To ensure that we actually get these things to market, you need to make sure that we have all the logistical pieces in place to make it, you know, the path of least resistance, if you will, to ensure that we're able to get those to market so that we can sell those to the people that need them now. These are things that go towards, you know, clean energy futures, some defence, high tech kind of specs. So just making sure that those projects are able to get off the ground and deliver those resources where they're needed.
Do you see challenges or headwinds in the new year? I know that the federal government's environmental law reforms, they took a while to get through. There was a lot of back and forth between the resources sector nationally and the federal government on that. And in WA, for example, the Premier over there even weighed in and said that they weren't happy with the first draft or look at those laws. And anyway, eventually they've gone through Parliament. Do you see similar challenges coming this year in a different space?
Look, what we want to ensure and what's, you know, we're concerned about is that mining companies have excessive red tape instead of streamlining these decision-making processes. Need to ensure that the jurisdictions have the ability to make decisions that benefit those jurisdictions and their citizens there, and not just have an overarching body that is far away from what's happening on the ground, making those decisions, you know, arbitrarily for them. Look, the NT mining industry isn't looking for any sort of shortcuts. We're not looking to, you know, slip through unregulated. You know, we're a highly regulated and enforced industry. Just want to make sure that it's not overburdensome, that it isn't something that disincentivizes companies from investing in the Northern Territory.
Catherine Tilmouth from the Mineral Council of Australia speaking to Tom Robinson.
G'day, my name's Isabel Heffman and I'm a business analyst based at Amundimundi Station. So there's more than just running cattle and chasing cows around. There's a lot going on behind the scenes in the office. There's always an excuse to get onto Excel and make some data-driven decisions. And you're listening to the Country Hour.
Now, late last year, we told you about a shortage of queen bees in the Northern Territory. Beekeepers often import them from other parts of Australia, a practice not without risk, as many states struggle to control the spread of the bee-killing pest known as varroa mite. Doug Woodward is at the forefront of breeding queen bees in the Northern Territory and believes, with the right genetics, the industry here could be worth millions. He spoke with rural reporter Sam Parry about his ambitions for the year ahead.
I'm known in the industry as Ugly Doug, so I'm proud of it, and that's what I'm known around. Even the minister refers to me as Ugly Doug.
We're sitting in your workshop here. You've got a fair bit of equipment, some big table saws and lots of different woodworking and cabinetry equipment everywhere. But also on the bench behind you is a beehive by the looks.
Yes. That beehive, it's officially known as a cassette hive. It is certainly not something that is... I honestly don't think anybody else in Australia has one. It's a design used in Eastern Europe, primarily in Russia.
Can you show me what's in this box behind you then?
Now, I'm happy to open it up, but I'd like to see you come up and put your hand in there because you haven't got stung yet.
No.
And I think you should.
No.
The first door opens up and allows us to see the drawers that will are literally going to slide out like a set of drawers. There will be bees all over the place, so we just do this very slowly and gently just so they don't get annoyed with me and decide to give me an attitude adjustment. Here we go here, you can see there's bees all over the place. Let me introduce you to one of the boys. This is a drone bee, okay? Now I can look at that and know exactly what it is. You just flew away. The advantage of the drone bees are that they do not have a stinger. They cannot sting you.
That's why you were handling it.
That's right. Right?
Do you think you've learnt a lot about how to behave around bees in your time in the territory?
Oh yeah. But I've also been stung a lot. Bees are good like that. They are very, very patient in teaching you how to behave, right? Every time you make a mistake, one of them will come in and correct you. At least one, perhaps a few more. And when you stop making that mistake, then they say that's good and they keep doing it. There was one day, okay, where I did everything for a bad situation where I got over 200 stings.
What happened to you?
I was ill for 5 days.
You told Matt Brand last time you spoke with him on the Country Hour that you'd cracked the code somewhat when it comes to breeding queen bees. Is that what happens in that box?
Well, that's very... I think I must have been having... You sure I hadn't had some of the Christmas spirit at that point? We talk about cracking the code for growing queen bees. I've got to be honest, growing queen bees is easy. The queen that we've chosen for this particular box has been selected for her characteristics to pass on. That is how gentle she is, how much honey they produce. We're looking particularly at propolis collection because that there's an antimicrobial, antibacterial shield necessary for the health of the bee, and it's been bred out of queen bees. We need to breed it back into them.
How's your queen bee pedigree looking?
We've just spent close to $10,000 in bringing in some new genetics from one of the best places in Australia, and that's the Rottnest Island Queen Bee Breeding Program in West Australia. First shipment arrived 2.5 weeks ago. We've got 2 more shipments of those to come in. At that point there, we're swapping out all of the key breeding stock will be swapped out to Rottnest Island genetic stock.
That was beekeeper and breeder Tug Woodward, who's looking for growers around Mataranka to help his bee nutrition plan.
Rob Doyle here from Humpty Doo, Rambutan grower, and you're listening to the Country Hour.
I'm going.
My name is Charles Geary, and this is the NT Country Hour. It is 25 minutes past 11. Now, we've got some gas news for you this morning. Gas company Tamboran has bought a big stake in another player in that industry. They've acquired 98% interest in Falcon and Oil Gas. The deal is confirmed on the ASX today and is part of a broader deal where Tamboran will buy all of Falcon's subsidiaries. Falcon's main assets are its exploration permits in the Beetaloo Basin, but it also has projects in Hungary and South Africa. Now, you might remember Tamboran struck a deal with the NT government to sell appraisal gas in mid-2025, and a similar deal was made between the competitor Beetaloo Energy Australia and the government. Now, you'll be shortly taking it to the newsroom and then back to the cricket. But to end today's show, let's quickly check in with the weather. We have the Bureau of Meteorology with me this morning. What sort of rainfall did we see across the top end overnight and this morning?
Oh, g'day. Look, generally we saw rainfall totals of between about 20 to 40 millimetres across the top end, and some of that fell across the Victoria River District as well. We had one higher total of 56 millimetres at Bulman in the Arnhem District.
We also saw a bit of rainfall in that Katherine region. Are you able to tell us a little bit more about that?
In the Katherine region, yeah. In the last 24 hours, we've seen falls of up to about 10 millimetres in our gauges with some thunderstorm activity.
And yesterday on the Country Hour, we were talking a little bit about a monsoon forecast for the Gulf. Can you tell us if there's been any updates on that forecast?
Yeah, expectations are the same. So at the moment, we're seeing the monsoon extend across the Arafura Sea, so north of the top end. And then in coming days, particularly from about Thursday, we expect a trough to develop through the monsoon trough to develop through the Gulf of Carpentaria, and then extending into the Northern Coral Sea. So we'll be just monitoring that for the potential for any tropical lows to form within that trough in the Gulf of Carpentaria.
And for the top end, what can we expect for the rest of the day and overnight?
Yeah, so mainly just isolated shower and storm activity developing later this afternoon and overnight. And most of the rain will be pushing up from the southeast, much like we saw yesterday. And there'll be the chance of those storms extending right down to about Tea Tree. But the further you get through the Barkly and the Tanami, they'll be very isolated and not likely to bring too much rainfall. And the other thing I should mention, we've got a severe heatwave warning for parts of the Lassiter District. We're looking at some very hot temperatures, not just in the Lassiter, right across southern and central NT, but it is triggering some severe heatwave conditions for the southwest corner of the territory.
Talking about Central Australia, can they expect any of that rain to come down, or is it just that heat wave?
There'll be a little bit of rain, across parts of the Barkly and the Tanami this afternoon, possibly getting into parts of the Lassiter from tomorrow, but it's not going to bring a lot of rainfall, and it's not going to bring a lot of relief from the hot temperatures. The main story through Central Australia is maximum temperatures hitting 40 to even 45 degrees in the Tanami in the coming days.
Thank you for joining us today on this shorter version of the Country Hour to give us that weather update.
Thank you.
That's all the time we've got for on the Country Hour today. Now, remember, we'll be back on live today on the streaming, on the ABC Listen app, on the website from 12:30 for our full usual hour-long program. And if you're after even more of the best rural news from across the country, be sure to head over to the ABC Rural website. If you want to listen back to this program or any others, you can also go to the ABC Listen app. I'm Charles Geary. Thank you for tuning in this morning for the Northern Territory Country Hour.